When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have to say what I feel. Miami has so much appeal. A great place to get a seafood meal. Miami. Miami, Miami.
Picture it, Los Angeles, 2017.
Welcome to Out on the Lanai, the only Golden Girls podcast you're ever going to need to listen to. I'm H. Allen Scott.
And I'm Carrie Doherty.
And guess what? This is a podcast where we watch an episode of the Golden Girls and then we talk about it.
And we just watched season 6, episode 12, Ebb Tide's Revenge, which aired on December 15th, 1990.
AKA the tearjerker episode.
Yeah, it's the buckets, one where Phil dies and it's very...
It's a lot.
It's emotional.
But
it's
to counter the emotions,
we couldn't do it alone today.
We couldn't do it alone, which is why we maybe sound different. I don't know. I probably sound the same at my apartment.
Because we're in a different space emotionally.
Well, also I find like different physically. Places we go, it makes us sound different on the podcast. Like my apartment is very well insulated, surprisingly. Anyway, we are here. We're sitting in a famous person's apartment.
Oh, Alan. I mean, please.
A golden famous person. If you didn't recognize the voice, please welcome Elliot Glazer.
Famous person's apartment.
I like making Elliot feel very uncomfortable the start.
That's ridiculous.
I will say though, all of your gold like statues across the marble floors are gorgeous.
Yeah, they are.
Thank you so
much.
Yeah,
we are at his apartment.
Just some light decor.
And it's weird. he has a maid also named Coco.
I do?
Very, yes, you do.
I see. This is a joke. It's a bit.
Still doing the bit.
I have a maid. I'm like, I've had a cleaning lady every now and then, but I'm pretty sure her name's Marlena.
Marlena, we love you.
I love Marlena.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure.
We had to. This is an important episode. I love this
episode so much.
We also have Atticus here, guys. Atticus is a very, very... He is actually more famous than Elliot.
He's pretty famous.
Yeah, he's really famous. So you guys should check
him out. If you watch the dog wedding episode of Broad City, he
classic.
Is my dog
it's
on
where
the show.
It's Atticus is marrying...
John Early's dog.
Yes.
And you know, we had Atticus because he's so well behaved, like weirdly well behaved, and the pet dude, like the animal trainer coordinator on set, because we had a bunch of dogs there that day, was like blown away by Atticus and was like, "How is he not a trained show dog?" I'm like, "No, he's just a weirdo.
Wow,
he's just a weirdo who never makes any noise and who goes catatonic once you pick him up. He just doesn't move.
Yeah,
and so it was very easy to shoot with him all day. Whereas on the other hand, John Early's dog, which was this little Chihuahua named Daisy, literally didn't stop shaking and farting all over John.
Sounds like John.
Just shaking and farting nonstop.
Yes,
but Atticus was in that episode.
Also, Abby ends up like pantsless in that episode.
She does, she ends up in a hole.
Well, I'm glad we can start this episode of the podcast off on a joke, on a light note, talking about farts and dog weddings. Because this one's tough.
This one is sad.
You know, and you've heard me say it before, especially loyal fans of the show, Sophia is my weakest link. And this one, I gotta give it to Estelle. She was funny.
Yeah.
But also, I shouldn't tear up every time I see this episode. I know the lines word by word.
Every single line by line,
I know the words, and I tear up at the end because it does feel very raw.
Yeah.
And as Alan, you've described explained before, you've said she's turning on her sort of theater thing here?
Well, that's,
and
yeah,
doing the Torch Song trilogy. Is that what it's called?
I was just going to go into that. Yeah, so I mentioned a lot of times on this podcast the importance of Torch Song trilogy, not just in you guys who are listening to this podcast, watching Torch Song trilogy.
Sorry, I have to interrupt. Carrie, yeah. If you don't want my dog licking your hand, you are more than welcome to pull it away.
He's okay. I mean, unless it's like a training thing where you're no, we don't allow him, because my dog will just sit and lick my hand
okay,
a lot.
Yeah,
he's
a licker and a kisser, and not everybody likes that.
No, that's very sweet of you to say.
I've been messaging guys on Instagram trying to find someone like that. No, Torch Song Trilogy. The importance of Torch Song Trilogy in terms of not only Estelle Getty's career, but also queer history in general and queer sort of theater and media and film. So, like, Torch Song Trilogy was a Harvey Fierstein play that ran off-Broadway and then on-Broadway, and that's where Estelle Getty got her part. She played Harvey Fierstein's mother.
And it was also a movie, right?
And it became a movie in 1988 with Anne Bancroft and Harvey Fierstein. And it basically was one of the few films in the 80s, because the 80s, of course, was all about AIDS. Like, it was, especially if it's anything gay, someone has AIDS. And in this film, it wasn't about that in play. It was about a man who... he was a drag queen in living in Brooklyn in Park Slope, and he played at this club all the time, and all he wanted was like a husband and a kid. That's all he ever wanted. And his life never really dictated that because of what he did and who he is and him being gay. And he had this overbearing mother who never could accept him for being who he is and any of the relationships he wound up in. And something happens in the play, and there is some death, but it's a comedy still.
Right.
And there's this beautiful scene that is very much like this episode of The Golden Girls, where Anne Bancroft's character, or Harvey Fierstein's mother's character and Harvey Fierstein, are forced to, in a Jewish cemetery, have a screaming match about the worth of each of their loves in their lives and who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful scene. And I can't, watching Anne Bancroft do it in the film, I can't imagine what Estelle Getty would have been like in doing that
right,
live.
Because it was so dramatically... hefty.
And it really spoke to what the performance she gave in this episode.
I also pulled out Jim Colucci's book, which you guys should all have. And I know we talk about the book on the podcast all the time, Golden Girls Forever.
It's right behind you.
Oh, it's great.
Somewhere on that shelf.
It's somewhere behind me. But Mark Sotkin, the writer of this episode...
Past guest on this podcast.
Past guest of the podcast, said... you know, as part of this episode in Jim's book, that this episode was really hard for Estelle. I think emotionally people were talking about like children passing away and
she connected. She was very connected to the AIDS community,
yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess Sophia was originally supposed to make like the Teddy joke at Phil's casket, but she said that didn't feel honest to her. It didn't feel honest that she would make any jokes
about it,
and
right.
So they changed it, and then they got nominated for a Writers Guild Award for this episode.
Oh, wow.
And I also think that like, the balance between humor and drama and heavy emotion was like they wrote it and handled it very well, because there are a lot of jokes in this episode.
It's really a funny episode.
Yeah.
Really
it really
funny.
Is.
Like, I mean, but also, sorry, this is Atticus. Atticus? He's so voracious these days that he licks the bowl clean, even though it's already clean. And I'm so sorry. It makes so much noise.
I mean, I
sorry,
would do
listeners.
This. I'm trying to lose weight right now. I'm really hungry. I relate to Atticus's plight in this moment.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's just, it's so funny. And like it is a dramatic episode about like real things. And it's also very Italian. Mm-hmm. Like it's very much about like, family and family rules and it's just, it feels almost, you know, mob like in the way that they, you know, it's a very Italian storyline about like loyalty to family, and it is just so fun. I mean, it really is so funny when to imagine what a man in a casket wearing a teddy. Like, that
insane.
Is hilarious.
It's insane.
But when the priest is walking, when Father Salerno is walking around and the camera's moving with him, that's an empty casket.
Very,
they didn't,
yes.
They
very
didn't
much
put
empty.
Enough flowers in there. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you can see right
make
in.
Make sure you got enough
but
flowers
do,
covering
I just love,
it.
I love, is he wearing a suit? What did she say? Almost? Not exactly. Is he wearing a suit? Not exactly. A dress? Not exactly. Culottes? Please don't say culottes. He's wearing a teddy, but a
masculine
teddy. That is that is such a fucking funny, but a masculine teddy.
A masculine
and then to imagine
teddy.
What that, it's so good. And it took me several viewings before I actually built up the energy to Google what a teddy is. I would just imagine for so long, like, I didn't really assign anything to it in my head, where I was just like, a teddy, okay, it must be some sort of, like, sexy piece of lingerie. And that's kind of what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's like
a
short nightgown.
Yeah, I'd say a short piece of lingerie.
Right.
If I myself know what a teddy is, and I'm thinking of...
I mean, I don't.
...of what a teddy is. I may or may not own a few.
Do you?
Yeah,
do you wear it for Stan?
Maybe.
On those dirty nights.
It's interesting to... Let's just talk about Phil as a character in this show, because he's someone who's referenced a lot.
A lot.
He's almost always the butt of
a punchline.
He's always a punchline, and we never meet him, and yet he dies. And we have this episode that's so heavy, and we're still able to feel Sophia's pain and Dorothy's pain,
crazy.
And we've never met him.
Yeah, Howard Stern calls it... Well, I mean, this is different, but... His whole show he likes to call theater of the mind, and it's the truth. It's like when you aren't given, especially like reading a book, when you aren't given the actual tools to see this thing, person or thing, it actually impacts you sometimes more because it's your brain choosing what that looks like.
Yeah.
We're choosing individually what he actually looks like.
That's what the movie, that's why the movie Signs was so scary to me until we actually saw the alien, and then I was like, this is dumb. But up until then, scared the shit out of me.
I mean, I would say Phil is not unlike Alien and Alien. Phil is not unlike the Demogorgon in Stranger Things. Phil is the unseeable, the unknown known or whatever. Or what's his name? Donald Rumsfeld. The known unknown?
Yes.
What am I talking about?
The unknown known.
The known unknown.
Known unknown.
Can we talk about the living room scene where Blanche comes out wearing her red number?
So good.
It reminded me of
Satan's secretary.
Was it the funeral dress? What was the red dress she wore in another episode? Was it her wedding day?
Oh yeah, she still fits in it, but it doesn't zip up all the way.
You know what this episode reminds me of too, which is funny. Sophia try.
Sophia, just licking my leg.
Sophia, trying to. Try to fuck up the wedding for Stan and Dorothy,
right.
But it's only rehearsal day.
Yes.
And she comes out head to toe black. And my thought process was like, well, is that so crazy? Like that someone wear black to a wedding? And then I realized like, I'm thinking of the little black dress. This is like Sophia wearing all black and like a pearl necklace.
Yes.
Like the most dour outfit. That is really funny.
I love Dorothy's line when she talks about how Phil dies and he went out to buy an evening gown and he had a heart attack. And she says, to die trying on knockoffs at big gals
pay less. I also I love that they flip it on her kind of and let her be the sort of, not the butt of the joke, but she's not actually piecing together what we're seeing, which is a rarity for her to say, a man goes out to buy an evening gown. What is it?
What's the worst you expect to happen?
Yeah.
So a man goes out to get an evening gown. You don't think anything could happen, could you?
Right.
Or something like that.
Right.
And it's funny. It's funny when she's sort of not aware of what's going on.
Well, the entire series, I mean, Dorothy, not the entire series. It really, the Phil lines and the Phil being a crossdresser really only came about in the last few seasons.
Yeah. Is that right?
I don't think it was from the beginning.
They said it early on.
Did they?
Yeah, I feel like they mentioned.
There's
it
a really
early
funny.
Yeah.
I forget what episode it is where she says, "Phil and I used to love trying on each other's clothes," and Blanche says, "Oh, so you liked wearing boys' clothes?" No, and luckily for me, neither did Phil.
Yeah, it's so great. Why do you think? I guess we know why, because it's the show. It's very interesting that they had Phil's funeral down in Miami when Sophia and Dorothy seemed to be
strangest,
the only family.
Yeah, it's so strange.
And also, his children weren't there.
Wait, say that again.
His children didn't come.
So his only family
is Sophia and Dorothy, right?
But his children don't come to the funeral, which is bananas.
Yeah. Makes
and
no
also,
sense.
Even if. Even so, my thinking is: does that mean they shipped the body? Like, what? How did his body get to? That happens.
Well,
if you were to die on vacation out of state or something, and sometimes if you're you know, you're in college and your family's in a hometown, yeah. or you just, you know, you live somewhere else, but you know you're going to be buried with your family's plot.
So
I don't know the logistics
mean?
Of how
they just read a great book about Lincoln's son and them not being able to ship the body back to Illinois. Sorry, random.
Shipping it. Like, what does that mean?
Well, there, you can ship. Actually, no.
Are you thinking like when I fly to like New York, are there bodies in the plane that I'm on?
You can fly bodies. You can. I know this because we did that with my grandpa. Oh,
do they fly him on ice? Like, what is that? Dry ice?
I don't know. I wasn't with them when they flew.
Listeners, which one of you out there are in like the embalming
someone knows.
Morgue flying
someone
dead
knows.
Bodies
I mean, it's
business?
A very scary question to ask. How did Phil get from New Jersey to Miami while completely dead?
On a plane, probably like a FedEx plane, right?
Oh, that's so
like
scary.
With packages.
I think they have on like commercial airlines options
Please
for that.
Please don't say that. I don't want to think. I don't want to know that.
I'm pretty sure they do. You guys have flown Delta before. There's been a dead old body downstairs.
God. Also,
they wouldn't ship the dead bodies
the
with
dogs.
The dogs. Yeah. That's no way. There's no way.
Also, it's very interesting that Phil's wife's name is Angela, and that Sophia has a feud with her, just like her sister Angela.
She has so many feuds. She's the original Real Housewife.
Yeah, she's like the original Danielle Staub.
Should we talk about Brenda Vaccaro?
Wait, I have a question.
Yes,
is because I love. I mean, there's nothing more patronizing than Sophia calling Angela Big Sally.
I mean, I love
it's
it.
So mean. It's so
except you and
crude.
I have texted about how we get
well.
Big
Hold
Sally?
On.
Yeah.
My question is Big Sally, is Sally a name that's actually has something to do with the name Angela? Or is it specifically just like,
I think
it's a
cultural
name?
Reference. It's like, you know, like Bertha. You know what
so
I mean?
So it's like a fatty name, and Sophia's just like,
so.
You're Big Sally.
I think so.
That's
it's like
horrible.
It's like a Chatty Cathy, Chatty Charlie sort of
I've
thing.
I've just never heard of Big Sally. Like,
Me
I was
either.
Like, I feel like she's a truck driver, but like, she's really peppy and like, maybe like, has really good hair.
Yeah.
Big
I don't
Sally.
Know.
I love it.
I love Brenda Vaccaro.
She's pretty great.
She's.
Can I tell you guys another fun fact I learned from Jim's book about the role of Angela in this episode?
Please.
So apparently, Cher was a huge fan of the Golden Girls.
Amazing.
And would watch on her treadmill. And so.
And that's back then. That's back
when it probably wasn't
80s.
Electric.
The treadmill?
I guess it was electric.
otherwise, you're just running.
They have these new treadmills that don't have.
Those weird CrossFit treadmills. They're very bizarre.
I don't understand them.
You
they don't
them?
Have electricity.
No.
They're like self-starting, and so they're shaped sort of like a U. They like dip,
and they go
terrifying.
So fast.
They're very scary.
So fast.
Oh, interesting.
I can't keep up.
But they're probably better for the environment, right?
So, they are. They are good. They're really good
for the environment. I want the environment
to save me. Has anybody else had the awful experience, and I've had this many times in a treadmill, of running very fast and the treadmill shutting down?
Okay. I have. No.
This happens to nobody but
Let
me.
Let me just
and
say.
Brandon
no.
Allen think it's hilarious.
Elliot and our mutual friend Brent Sullivan, past guest of this podcast, we have we have this group text going for years now of just us shitting on lots of things. But Elliot has shared this about there's something in the way you're running or something.
I am
in
so
how
insulted that this, it happens so often, or it did when I would run on treadmills, where I would run really fast and the treadmill would stop. And be
and
like,
you're not pressing the button or anything.
Nothing. And I'd have to unplug it and plug it back in. And this has happened on different treadmills at different gyms. And my question is the treadmill like fat shaming me and being like, I can't handle that? Like, what's
or
happening?
Or are you running so fast that it's sort of like like a Back to the Future? You've peaked at your 88 miles per hour and now you're just
but honestly,
in a new dimension kind of situation.
But honestly, is the treadmill actually saying you're going too fast for what? Like, there's no way. And also, then I think about it, and I'm like, well, I'm not like a big, fat person.
What
and
setting thinking, are you putting it at, though?
Very fast.
Have you entertained
like
the idea of
very
a ghost?
Fast.
Super fast, like 12.5.
Why would anyone do that?
Because I would do it, run in intervals of like very, very, very fast, then walk. Very, very, very fast, then walk.
But very fast is like 8.
Yeah, but if you can go all the way up to 10, 11, 12, there's no reason that the treadmill should be like, no, not you. Not you, got buddy.
Yeah.
And then I think about it, and I'm like, even if I was like 500 pounds, would the treadmill be like, no, stop, you know? Or like, there's no way that the treadmill working for like huge bodybuilders and football players.
Okay, out on the Lanai fans, let us know how you transport a body, and also let us know if any of you have had troubles on a treadmill like Elliot has. We really need your help this week, guys.
Treadmill shame.
Yes, no.
So, guys,
no.
Back to Cher.
We should also say, incidentally, about Cher.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's not directed exactly to what we were saying, but while we were streaming this episode, the strangest commercial that I've seen in as long as I can remember, besides maybe the creepy Burger King guy, was a Gap ad that looks like it's from their mid-90s, which is already strange, where Cher is duetting with Future, and they don't look like they're in the same room, and it's so
it does look like they were shot separately and composited together.
Oh! Sorry, guys.
What is that?
Yeah, it's a lot.
So, anyway, I can't see Cher as Angela or Big Sally.
I mean,
Sally.
Because this was years after Moonstruck, so she was definitely the character of Angela.
But we haven't yet said what they...
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Cher is a fan of the podcast.
Oh,
or,
of the
sorry,
show.
Cher is probably a fan of the podcast, too. But she was a fan of the show, and the writers, I guess... multiple times wrote roles for her, and at the last minute she would decline. And so the last role that they wrote for her was Angela, and she declined at the last minute.
What in the
once
world
again.
Could get in the way of filming a? Well, I guess she was doing those shampoo or whatever those. Remember that she was doing those infomercials time.
This was years later. After that, at this time in 1990, she was starring in the fantastic film Mermaids.
Yeah,
and
but she's,
she also came out with. Wait for it. If I could turn back time.
Wait, this is from 1990?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That
and the infomercials come later.
Yeah, but Turn Back Time, I think, was 80s.
No, this is, I think it was 90.
No, I think it was 80s.
So what you're saying is that before she was doing
after
the
Moonstruck.
After Moonstruck, before the infomercials, they offered her to do the Golden Girls, and she turned it down, even though she said, "I want to do the show."
Yeah, I just wonder if it's if she's like just had like scattered brain, like, "Oh no, I can't this week." Thinking like, "I'm Cher, they'll just write another role for me next
what
week."
What other roles do you think she would have tried out for,
it
or
came
that
out
have been
in
written
1989,
for her?
Guys, you're right, 1989.
I don't know. Who could they have written for? Yeah,
Magda. Nah.
Nah. But Cher would have been incredibly distracting in this
Very
episode.
Distracting.
She
Very
would have
distracting.
Been.
And Barbara Vaccaro does a fantastic job.
Brenda, let me just say.
What did I say?
You said Barra?
Barra? Barnda? Branda?
Let me just say.
I'll take it. I think Rue McClanahan Brew McClanahan.
I'm sure.
So it's fine.
Yeah. I want to give credit to Brenda because she is an accomplished actress that should be recognized. Academy Award nominee.
Right.
And she was in two different films that
what
are
was she nominated
close
for?
And dear to my heart. This film, this one time for us, it was not in the 70s, but her big claim to fame was in Midnight Cowboy, where she played a woman who hires John Voight, who's a prostitute in the film, and they have a very hilarious romp.
She was nominated for that?
No, she wasn't nominated for that. She was nominated for another film. But then, years later, how I literally, picture it, me, 14 years old, St. Louis, Missouri, at Werenberg 14 Ciné in De Pere. I was watching The Mayor
Has
Two...
another language.
I was like, I don't know what any of those words are.
I was watching... people in St. Louis will know. I was watching The Mayor Has Two Faces with Barbara Walters.
Barbara Walters?
My brain said Streisand and my mouth said Walters. It was very strange there. Barbara Streisand. And in the wedding scene, in the very beginning of the film... there's Brenda Vaccaro, who happens to be very good friends with Barbara Streisand.
Huh.
And I literally flipped out. I was like, oh, it's Phil's wife.
It's Big Sally.
Yes.
I loved the vinyl fake animal print she was wearing at the cemetery.
She's very gaudy. Also, wait, hold on.
Amazing.
Brenda Vaccaro was nominated for Oscars?
For a Oscar.
For, do we know? Oh, you said for some...
Yeah, it was for a film I don't remember from the 70s.
So that is, I mean, it's not every... actor or actress who's nominated for an Oscar who goes on to, I mean, where is she? And also, like, she's a good actress. Why is she like...
She's character actor. She's playing...
I mean,
she has an extensive resume.
This is an Emmy award-winning show, and it's sixth season. Yeah.
And,
and
if you're
going to
replace...
Work.
If Cher, an Academy Award winner, Cher, can't do it, and you're going to replace... you got to replace it with another Academy Award nominee.
I just honestly, like, I know this is the Jew in me, but I'm, like, dying to know how Brenda Vaccaro makes money. Where does she live? Does she live in the Valley? Does she live in New York? Does she live in Jersey?
No,
is she a member of Fran Drescher's family?
I think
she could have plucked Angela out and put her in the nanny as like one of Fran finds. Okay, let's talk about the cemetery scene. the cemetery, which is the same one where they buried
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy. Wait, minus the Weeping Willows.
I have to say, just to give her credit, Brenda, she had a very busy 2017. She was in Gypsy. She was in The Clapper, Superior Donuts. She was in Kubo and the Two Strings, Just Let Go. I mean, she's busy.
Good. That actually makes me very happy.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
She's probably in the hills somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. She's probably in the hills.
Yeah, she's working.
Dorothy's eulogy in this scene. Well, first, I mean, I feel like, Elliot, every time we have you on, we always talk about the jokes at the expense of Dorothy's looks with
incredible.
The father asking her, you
if she's
are a
dude,
girl,
yeah.
Are
you a girl? I love that he says girl, too.
Yeah,
so is the assumption, insane. I guess we're saying that Phil was a cross-dresser, but not transgendered.
He was not transgendered.
Okay.
I mean,
but
well,
that seems like
well,
the priest is sort
well,
of confusing.
Let's,
wait, the
let,
two.
Let me back this up. So let's keep in mind, this was 1990, mm-hmm. and some of these words, transgender, was not a known word. So we can't imply or expect a series to use language that didn't exist at the time. Let's just say that. Also, too, in some sense, Phil died in 1990, the character. Mm-hmm. And we don't know if Phil ever really maybe would have transitioned at some point. Like maybe Phil didn't know that that was a possibility.
Well, Phil makes me think of my uncle.
Yeah.
Who, for all intents and purposes, cross-dresses.
Yeah.
And it's been a sort of family... See, it's not a secret, but it's... Yeah, no, it is. It's a family secret that sort of, like, unfurled itself over
not
many
anymore.
Years. Well, not anymore. I blew the lid off of it. But no, but, like, you know, there's been small increments of cross-dressing that we've seen. And apparently, you know, I mean, apparently some of others have seen him in even more, you know, of women's clothes. Mm-hmm. And so I always think about Phil and... I always think about Phil, someone who I never met, because he's not real.
And he never was seen. You never see anything about Phil.
But yeah, with that being said, it's interesting to think about Phil. And I love so much in the cemetery scene when all these like widows come and lay flowers on the casket and Blanche says they're sluts. And it's not even like the jump, the A to C jump there of going like, who are they? And it's like, oh, are they? They're like mistresses of his.
Yeah.
And no, it's actually dudes dressed up like women, and you add on the extra joke that they're his poker buddies. Like, it's so good.
Flew from Newark to Miami. Good friends.
There is
good
something
friends.
That I do have to say about those three, and then also just Phil in general and cross dressers. There's this great coffee table book. I forget the name of it. I have it at home. I'll post it when we post this episode. But an artist found sort of photographs from like the 1950s. Of these sort of Tupperware parties that existed amongst men
this.
Who would leave, I forget what town they were in, but they would go out to this sort of retreat, this house, and they could all put on women's clothes and sort of have tea parties and have sort of the whatever, and they were able to sort of be women for the weekend and then go back to their wives and their children and their jobs. And we forget that, like, this is an isolated group of people. Maybe they're trans, maybe they're transvestites, maybe they just, you know, who knows? Mm-hmm. But like, we forget that there's a whole culture out there of people that were like this. And in some way, yeah, the Golden Girls are using it as sort of a tongue-in-cheek way to tell a joke of a character and to make a character more fanciful and weird. But also, too, this is the only episode where they really sort of shamed Phil.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Because the rest of the episodes were they were tongue-in-cheek. They were funny, sure, but they never outright said, they never disregarded him because of it.
Mm-hmm. And also, the whole episode is, technically, they're goofing on, you know, the goof is that, like, there's this family feud happening. That's funny.
Yeah.
But there's this feud happening that it turns out to be because of a dowry.
Yeah.
Which is so old world and so funny. But then after that actually gets revealed in the very last scene, then we actually get to the meat of the character, which is that Sophia is literally just suffering from not just, you know, her child passing away, but more importantly, that she thought she was the cause for his cross-dressing, which is like, Wait! Now, wait! Just before we leave, but
I know
it's a big statement. It's a big statement.
They do. They unpack it slowly.
But
it's
you
very,
want that,
right at the end.
That's a. I mean, that's perfect writing there.
Perfect, and the ending where what did I do to make him the way he was?
Yeah.
And what he was a good guy. Like that's it. I'm out. I'm done. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. That's all he was.
So good.
Doesn't matter what else he was.
It's also really interesting that this has been Sophia's point of view about Phil for all these years. In so much, because in the episode where Clayton wants to marry Doug, you know, she famously says, "Everyone wants someone to grow old with, and shouldn't everyone have that chance?" So she is liberal and open-minded and progressive.
Well, you're conflating two separate issues, which I will. There's a big difference between that statement and what she's going through here, only because A, not a family member. That's one thing. B, Clayton's gay.
I think Carrie's saying that she's very progressive
she's very
in her values.
I think
we're putting that on her. I don't think Sophia's actually progressive at all. I think Sophia's I think Sophia's actually more conservative than we like to. I mean, not politically. I'm not talking politics, guys. I'm talking about in terms of the way she sort of lives and works.
Then why
and
do you
thinks.
Think she would say that to Blanche?
Well, because it's different there. Yeah, for that, I don't think that's necessarily a progressive, liberal, conservative thing. I think that's a mother saying, you know, or a friend to a friend saying, like,
it's pretty progressive.
But it's about acceptance. Like, I think it's like she wants Blanche to accept her brother, and like her brother loves someone and just wants to be happy. And shouldn't you want that person to be happy? But yet she can't accept the same of her son. It's like he's not hurting anyone.
It's a different thing because it's a different.
If
it's
it makes
her son.
Him happy well, and he's not hurting anyone.
But also, what's happening there is that up until that point, she, you know, insofar as we saw, would like, sure, Phil was the punchline, but it was never about him being a weirdo or a creep or some sort of like, you know, societal, you know, outcast. Right. It was more just about this is his thing. And so this is the first time that as she does point out those things and it's still funny and tongue in cheek, it takes her to break down to actually show a semblance of understandable conservatism about this, where she's like, God, after, you know, after all is said and done, I am uncomfortable with it.
Well, I also don't think,
but otherwise I think she is very progressive,
but she doesn't, I think personally from someone who I feel like, I mean, I have many trans people in my life. I understand trans people. I've been involved in many of whatever. I think it's actually offensive to compare acceptance of gay people to acceptance of people who maybe don't fit on the gender norm. And I know that many trans people also get very offended when straight people lump trans and gay people into the same bracket all the goddamn time, when it's not a sexuality issue, it's a gender issue. And they're two very separate things.
Sure.
But gender, and sexuality, as if we're talking about Sophia's,
well, yeah, and my
you're
point
about,
is,
like,
my
Sophia's
point is,
general
my point is that yes, you're right. Acceptance of love in whatever form it comes, but in 1990, at that time,
insane.
The idea of someone wanting to be
insane.
A different gender,
yes.
is insane.
Insane,
and so the fact that that's happening to her son, it's very separate from what Clayton's going through. Mm-hmm.
But also the fact that Sophia is taking that leap, that in 1990 saying
totally
you should, you know, you should be complete. You forget about accepting your brother. You should forget about tolerating your brother's sexuality. You should accept it because he's just like you.
Yeah.
And her saying that Phil was different mm-hmm. is still not her saying he was sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in 1990, to your point, like that is quite extreme.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
Hey, Chelan, you also brought up a really good point at how at the funeral in the cemetery that after Dorothy gives her eulogy, she doesn't have a seat.
She has no seat. She doesn't want to see it.
The what'd you say?
She has no seat at the end of the eulogy. She just has to go up and hold Rose's hand.
I wish we saw the kids or heard about them.
Well, I mean, if you're never going to see Phil, like if we see anyone of the family, at least we see Big Sal. It's sort of on par to not see
but
the
how
kids.
How many kids do they have?
They had a bunch, if I remember right. There was an episode where Sophia went and...
Well, and that was another question that I had where Angela talks about how, like, again, because of the feud of you know, the dowry where her $47 check bounced and, you know, Angela says that she, like, never came to visit and, you know, whatever I did, oh, whatever you think I did. So
I hope it was worth
how many times do you think, Brenda, sat at home with the man of the moment and was like, I just have to read. I have to get this right. I have to be Cher.
She's great. She's so great.
I feel like she just knew it. She nailed it. But yeah, Sophia has gone to visit them. I think it might have been a little romance where she like packs all of her like marinara sauce. So she's definitely gone to visit. And again, has like made fun of Phil.
They
live in a trailer and eat roadkill. Angela does not strike me as someone who eats roadkill, by the way.
There's no way that she lives in a trailer. There's no way they eat roadkill. That's a very different character than the one we saw, who was basically... I mean, I was literally going to say she's literally Brenda Vaccaro, but it is Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah.
Brenda Vaccaro is basically playing Brenda Vaccaro or Karen in Goodfellas. Like very, very Lorraine Bracco.
Very Lorraine Bracco.
Pre-Sopranos.
What do you want me to do about it? I love you!
Guys, season six of the show, they got Bea Arthur to walk out of the kitchen on her knees.
This moment with Bea Arthur is like, because you don't see Bea Arthur doing slapstick a lot.
No, you don't.
The fact that she is, I mean, this compares to her being in the Grab That Dough machine. Like, that. Those two moments, highlights for me.
So good.
So good.
I love it.
Oh.
Let's see, what else do we have to talk about? I mean, we learned
we're jumping all over the place with this episode, guys.
We learned that Rose has a cousin named Ingmar Hassenpfeffer Stoodleduker.
What was the last thing that she's...
Who would shit out of an oak tree.
I said, did Rose just say... And it was something that sounded very odd.
Oh.
Rose said something when she was on the couch.
It's about how her dowry, where Blanche thought it was jumping beans, and she said, I'll have you know it was the biggest pumpkin of the season.
No, well, that was great. That's one of those lines they cut from syndication.
Yeah.
But no, Rose said something, said a weird word or something that caught me off guard.
It wasn't Hassenpfeffer Stoodleduker?
No, not that one.
That weird word?
Nope, not that one.
Didn't throw you? I think Rose, in many ways, Rose is sort of like a standout in this episode. I mean, Dorothy's great, but Rose subtly throughout the episode is sort of, you know, having little lines with Sophia where she's implying like it's okay to cry, it's okay. She's being the real heart of the episode, and then she really sort of manifests that in the end when Blanche. And this happens a lot when there's episodes that don't center around Blanche. Blanche becomes dismissive and almost bitchy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And in this episode, she sort of was that in her being insulting to Rose and the comments and the things that she would say. And then at the very end, you know, Rose is like, I'm serious. Like, she actually, like, tries
she
to...
She says, I didn't spend, like, or something like, I spent a long time at that grief counseling center. I learned a thing or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
then
true.
Later she says, you know, when she's talking about Ingmar, she says, let go of the shame. It's okay he was different. It's okay that you loved him.
Yes. Yeah.
My baby is gone.
Oh, wait, I know what it is
okay.
now. That she said Ingmar was slow Ingmar?
Right.
Oh.
She said,
slow. Is that his name, I think?
No, I think they were describing him as slow.
Oh, as slow.
Yeah, and I never heard that before, and it was like, oh, wait, they just came out and Rose is actually talking about a cousin or a relative being, like, mentally disabled. No, that's not the right word, but, like, you know, behind.
Yeah.
You know, a little off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wait, it's just interesting to hear her say that instead of the usual, like, goofy descriptors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, oh, great. I get it. That's
cool. Normally it was like, he had herring in his pants.
And she's saying, he had actual, like, neurological
problems.
Yeah. I love that.
I do love Sophia's buildup at the end after Rose sort of gets her to her, where Sophia's saying, you know, whatever she did to make Phil
him
the way he was. And if you think about it, like, that's a real thing for a parent. That's a real thing.
Oh, yeah, it's acceptance of your child.
When was it that I did whatever I did?
Yeah.
What did I say? What did I do to make him the way he was?
Which, if you think of, like, I mean, you know, Ellie and I are gay, and I can't think, I'm sure that our parents at some point maybe thought, like,
Did we do something
to do this? Like, you know, you have to maybe have that with a child, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, how can you not?
How can you not? You exactly.
Know, they're your children.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, Angela comes up and says what he was a good man, which is like.
So good.
And that's, yeah. And
you know, this is a great different point. From that, but what I love about this show too is that when I think back to, like, let's say 1990 and I was 7 years old, and let's say I had, and I didn't, I don't think I knew that when I was that young, But, you know, when I was a little bit older, you know, probably like 12, 13, that's when I had an inkling that I was, you know, different. Mm-hmm. And so when you, as a, let's see, I was, let's say if I was like, let's say it was like 1993. Mm-hmm. So I'm 10 years old, maybe even push up to like 1995, yeah, 12 years old. You know, it wasn't the same time it is now. You know, political correctness was happening, but it wasn't the same as it is now. Being gay was weird,
yeah,
and bad,
yeah,
and different.
Yeah.
And so to look around and take cues from, like, cultural, you know, items, TV mm-hmm. shows and movies, which are what were most accessible to me.
Yeah.
You know, I remember thinking, watching, like, My So-Called Life and mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. freaked out of the idea that if my secret came out, that I would basically turn into Wilson Cruz, yeah, and that suddenly I would have, like, a weird long earring, and I'd start wearing makeup and, like, weird, like, Amy Grant hats,
yeah,
and I would be bullied, you know?
Yeah.
But then you watch something like this, The Golden Girls, and it's like, even in the world of this show, mm-hmm. there's still a pop... apologizing is not the right word. Mm-hmm. They're still validating his experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've never even seen him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he cross-dressed, you know, so Blanche's brother is gay and Sophia's going to bat for him too. And it's like, it's normalized in a way that, sure, it was 1990, so the humor about it was different.
Yeah.
And now everyone would be offended immediately, which is understandable. But nevertheless, like, this show would have given me more comfort than, like, this quote unquote, you know, more culturally aware.
Like the show
aware.
That was maybe, yes, like aimed, yes, specifically aimed at doing that, yes, on a more regular,
well, I mean,
basis.
I think in a lot of ways, like, even now, you know, you look at events of, like, Charlottesville and the different things that are happening, and, you know, you have a lot of white people sort of really reassessing the role of race in this country,
yeah,
and racism in this country. And there's a line that I'm remembering people posting around saying that, like, it's not African Americans' job to cure white people of racism. It's
right.
white people's job to, yeah, cure themselves,
absolutely,
of racism, mm-hmm, and to school each other,
yes,
on, you know, their ignorant ways. And I think in some ways, like, this in 1990 is a way of straight, white, cisgendered sort of women to say, this is okay, this isn't weird. You need that so that My So-Called Life can come later.
Exactly.
You need the...
Oh, you know, Winnie Holzman was like, God, I love this show.
Oh,
she was,
oh,
like,
yeah,
at her,
oh,
like,
I, oh, I
giant
wish,
computer
I wish,
typing.
I wish.
This was a great episode.
Such
I'm
a
glad
good episode.
I definitely feel like I need to gazoon
so
tight. I feel like I want to go home and watch. Now I want to watch, like, A Little Romance. I want to,
yeah,
watch Forgive Me, Father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Case of Libertine Belle. Something a little bit
a
lighter.
Little less, a little softer.
A little softer.
Sure. But what an episode.
What
I
an
really
episode.
Do
what
love
episode.
This one.
What are our golden takeaways?
Oh, God. I can't even with this episode. You know what a golden takeaway is, Elliot, right?
Yeah,
I don't,
yeah,
have to,
yeah,
say it. Golden takeaway. My golden takeaway from this episode is for every single person listening to go watch Torch Song Trilogy. That's my golden takeaway.
That's a great takeaway.
Yeah.
I would say mine is, you know, it's interesting because this show is such a huge part of my life and so many lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a, like, writer and actor, you try not to let budgets creep into a lot of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so sort of heart, like uplifting and edifying to see the Golden Girls reuse sets that I know,
yeah,
from other scenes.
Like the funeral thing,
mm-hmm,
is Blanche's
funeral home,
dad,
the cemetery. I mean, I love that. And,
yeah,
it's like, it's just, I mean, it's just, I write on this soundstage that the show was shot on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just interesting to,
wow,
like, think about that and wonder, but also appreciate the fact that even the Golden Girls
yeah,
had to stick by a budget and cut corners.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So great.
That's an interesting, that's like a nice little insider's golden takeaway. My golden takeaway is something that I think it's fitting for this episode, but it's something that I didn't talk about in the last episode when I talked about going to see Betty White.
Mm-hmm.
Something that she said about death that I thought was very interesting. She said that when she was younger, and she would, like, ask her mother about death, that her mother would say, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of dying, because when you die, you finally learn the secret, the one secret. And the idea is that anybody in the world could learn everything that there is to know, possibly know, and experience everything there possibly is to experience mm-hmm. on this earth. But it's only when you die that you actually know what happens when people die. And so she said, so she tried to look at it in a more positive way.
I'm okay.
When you die, you learn the secret.
Love you, Betty White.
How does she know?
Love you, Betty White.
How does Mama White know?
I mean, you know, I thought it was a very,
I think that's great, but I'm also like,
sentiment that Betty White said.
Totally okay with not knowing what that's like.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine with that.
The secret of life.
Yeah.
Upon your expiration?
This, no.
I honestly thought I was going to get a better reception from the two of you.
The secret of life.
What freaks
me
out.
It freaks me out. Having cable. Just have cable. Oh, that's the secret
now
of life,
I need to
you
go
guys.
Watch the Libertine Bell and soothe my soul.
All right, guys. If you are following along with the podcast, the next episode we will be watching is The Bloom is Off the Rose.
The Bloom is Off the Rose.
That's the skydiving episode.
Oh, so good.
And this has been Out on the Lanai.
Thank you, Elliot, so
Thanks
much for coming
me.
And doing
yes.
this.
My pleasure.
What's going on with you, and where can people follow you on the interwebs?
Just everything is at Elliot Glazer or ElliotGlazer.com. And if you're in Los Angeles and you want to come see my show on the 16th of October, it's at the Virgil, Haunting Renditions Live.
Oh, I'll be out of town.
Oh, okay.
God damn it. I should be here.
You better go.
You
Bring
better
Stan.
Go.
Everyone
better
else go. Should go, too. Go in my place.
It's fun.
It is fun. I will say Haunting Renditions is such a fun show. They can look it up, like videos online.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, the videos exist. I've watched them.
It's all concert.
Yeah.
Full band.
It's so great, guys. You really,
Stan is obsessed with
them. If you're near one of those, you have to go to it. I insist.
Please come.
And you guys can go to outonthelanai.com for everything with the podcast. And I realize we haven't plugged our store lately. If you go to outonthelanai.com/store,
yes.
I believe you guys can buy t-shirts. I've been wearing a lot of like my Mike Dennison shirts. Yeah, you guys can get merch there. We have merch, which we never plug.
We're very bad at merch.
And if you guys want to make a donation to the podcast, you can go to outonthelanai.com/donate. You can make a one-time donation or set up a monthly donation through Patreon. I'm going to see how fast I can say this. If you guys can't make a monetary donation, but you want to support the podcast, you can go to iTunes and leave us a nice rate and review.
Mm-hmm. And I'm H. Allen Scott on everything.
And I'm Squid-Eat Squid on Twitter and Squidzy on Instagram.
Oh, and I'm going to Baltimore. What date is that? October 18th for the wedding, the couple, the Golden Girls wedding. It's going to be amazing. And
Stan Zimmerman and I
are going. We're going to have a nice little chat about, we'll record it for the podcast, of course, but have a nice little sort of conversation about him and the Golden Girls and that everything.
That's
it's going to be
amazing.
Yes. So
that's amazing.
Guys, check that out. MiamiisNice.com, I believe is the website, but we'll post it on the website on our page just to be sure.
And remember, guys,
as always, stay golden.